From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Caller,
I'm here with you.
That I heard of once in a lifetime, somewhere.
Faster, this is Stuart Altshuler, and licensed psychotherapist in Los Angeles. This is a show where every week we deal with issues relating to mental health from a holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit. My own philosophy, and try to live my own life, that without dealing with all aspects of who we are and finding a sense of balance in that, then the therapy or the growth methods that we're using or seeking out are just really not going to work and stay permanent. So every week, like I said, we deal with mental health issues, and tonight's topic is overcoming underachievement. My guest, who I'll be introducing in a little bit, is Ken Christensen, who specializes in this area of underachievement, particularly in adults, but as well as children. If you've listened to the show before, you've heard me mention often about my own experience with attention deficit disorder. And, I mean, this is a classic example of a blocked behaviors and knowing what needs to be done and not being able to get it accomplished, and the level of frustration and the impact on self-esteem in children and adults that ADD can have, and usually that means a drastic sense of disorganization, of not being able to move forward in projects, having too many things piled up all around us, and just feeling this total chaotic sense of energy in our lives. And because of that, very often people with ADD are underachievers. In fact, a lot of people with ADD are extremely intelligent, extremely creative, extremely intuitive, and the secret and the focus of treating someone with ADD is to help them tap into their own innate sense of intelligence, creativity, intuition, and put it to good use. But all this takes reprogramming and retraining, but it starts with actually identifying, number one, that there's a problem. So, as I said, I've talked about ADD before in this context, and when my guest is on in a little bit, he's going to be talking in a more general sense, because not everyone with ADD are underachievers, but they may feel like that. Not everyone who's an underachiever has ADD. There are plenty of people out there who have grown up in families where that sense of focus hasn't been taught, or there may be other issues because of problems in the family, violence, abuse, lack of self-esteem by mom and dad to be able to pass on more successful qualities and behaviors, maybe traumas in school with teachers or with fellow students. All these things can keep somebody from really reaching for successful outcomes of whatever it is they're assigned, or trusting and feeling confident that whatever it is they dream to do within themselves, whether it's kids or adults, that they can actually move towards those dreams and be successful. And for some people, it's just not having been taught basic behavioral skills in terms of organization, in terms of how to focus, in terms of, you know, how to organize a project or a task in a way that will assure success. And in basic psychological terms, change is created through repetition over time. So if the repetition over time is beliefs that I can't, I'm not good enough, I'm going to fail anyway, or no matter what I do, I'm going to be criticized, that repetition of those beliefs, of those types of impacts from the adults around a child, or even from adults to other adults, will reinforce the underachievement. I can't. I won't do it. I'm afraid to. But that same repetition over time is how we make changes. So it's very important to realize that change is possible. And personally, I wouldn't be doing the show if I didn't believe that. I wouldn't be a therapist if I didn't believe that. And I wouldn't be able to say it if I haven't experienced it in my own life, as well as seen many clients go through major changes in their lives, and some that you might consider small steps. But to me, change is change, and achievement is an achievement. It's not about quantifying it, that this is a big one, this is a small one. If someone's been stuck with something, every step along the way of healing and growth and change is an exciting and major event for them. And teaching them how to reinforce that and embed it so much so that they start building confidence that they can instead of I can't is the key to therapy, is the key to any change, any growth process, and is the key to how to raise children, how to reinforce these kinds of behaviors so that the children are getting off on the right start. So with all that being said, I am going to introduce you now to my guest, and his name is Kenneth Christian. He's a clinical psychologist, PhD, and he's the author of Your Own Worst Enemy, Breaking the Habit of Adult Underachievement. He's an expert on maximizing personal and organizational potential. He founded a number of different organizations, which I'm going to have him speak about, but he's also a licensed psychologist with more than a quarter century of organizational consulting, speaking, coaching, and clinical experience. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here, Stuart.
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to connect today and make this happen. And you heard my introduction, and I tried to cover a wide range of things, from ADD to non-ADD to adults to children. How do you define underachievement in the work that you do?
Well, there are obstacles that prevent people from achieving. The most striking thing about the classic kind of underachiever is the person who really doesn't have any obstacles that are significant, that are in the way of achieving well, and yet this person, for one reason or another, chooses not to really engage, chooses not to really take risks, doesn't get involved in things that are of real significance, and tends to coast through their lives. And there's a palpable sense of emptiness to the way they live over time. But they wind up being known for their talent and their potential far more than for any achievement that they ever actually put together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's significant and perverse about underachievers. The classic underachievers look like they have everything going for them. And while it's certainly true that people can have enormous talent and enormous obstacles in their way and can allow those obstacles to be the reason they don't succeed, the thing that's so significant about underachievement and that makes it so hard to bear when you see it in the classic sense is you cannot understand the waste. You cannot understand why this person would choose not to take advantage of this marvelous talent, or perhaps a combination of multiple talents, great intelligence in the sort of school IQ sense, but talents in athletics or dance or any number of things, and then you watch them, and for some reason they bail out, They quit. They stop. They take their success up to a certain point, and then it looks like they're allergic to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extremely difficult when they're children, for the adults in their lives to watch this, or for their coaches, or for their dance instructors, or whatever, as they go through their lives, including their supervisors at work, to watch this failure to connect, failure to engage.
But it's also I totally agree with you on all that, and taking it down to the individual, him or herself.
Right.
They're seeing that they're not achieving and accomplishing, and it's impacting them emotionally also. And we come back after this break. Let's talk about that for a little bit. This is Stuart Altshuler. Stay tuned. We'll be right back for some more Tell the Truth Faster. Tonight's topic is overcoming underachievement. This is a live call-in show, and the number in the Phoenix area locally is 480-874-1311. That's 874-1311. And if you happen to be one of our listeners listening from outside the Phoenix area via the simulcast on the Internet, the toll-free number is 888-437-7660. That's 1-888-437-7660. Ken, just as we were going into the break, you were talking about how hard it is to watch somebody who is clearly talented but not living up to their potential and underachieving. And I was making the comment also that it's also difficult for the individual who is seeing himself or herself compared to other students in school or coworkers or where he or her could be and getting to, and realizing that there's a part of them that just doesn't feel like they can or know how to, and how that impacts self-esteem and self-worth and all this other stuff. How do you deal with people that come to you from that perspective, and how is that part of the work that you do with them?
Well, what sets up underachievement for really super talented people is that they are actually often sought out and nearly catered to when they're young, because their talent is so obvious, and they're wizards. They're marvelous. They also have an uncanny tendency to be extremely present. It's as if the pleasantness must play some part in their actual underachievement, and in fact, if you scratch far enough, it does. But they kind of feel wonderful. They usually early on learn that they're a little smarter than everybody else, or a little more talented at violin or in foreign languages or whatever, and they live fairly charmed lives early on. And often underachievement does not come out of, it can, but it doesn't come out of a situation where there have been enormous obstacles, and in fact, it's perhaps the absence of obstacles that sets up part of the problem.
The lack of challenge for them.
They don't really have to work. For most things, they can do the schoolwork in their heads, and things come easy. And when things come easy, they kind of develop an idea that things ought to come easy.
Mm-hmm.
And work is not a part of the picture. It's just not a part of the way things work.
Mm-hmm.
And so at some point, the magic runs out, and you either, it could be in college, it could be at your first major career move, but somewhere you suddenly realize there are a lot of people who are out there who are at least perhaps as smart as you, but if they're not, they are working hard, and they know how to work hard, and they know how to be systematic and thorough, and they kind of learn something you didn't learn about hard work somewhere along the line, because things were really coming easy. And at that moment, the characteristic choice of a person who decides to underachieve, if you want to say they decide to underachieve, but whatever, they are faced with a new challenge and they make this decision that they're not going to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to bail, they're going to take an easier class, they're going to take a lighter load, they're not going to take that job because it's going to stress them out, whatever it is. But when they make that one choice, a series of choices of a similar nature tend to follow, and pretty soon what they're doing is consistently choosing a pathway that doesn't have much challenge but also has not much interest. So they may at first feel that they're even clever and a little smarter than the drones who work hard, but at some point they begin to feel that their talent is a bit of a curse because they begin to be pressured by people from the outside to do more than they're doing, mm-hmm. and they can start flailing then and feel a lot of frustration. And over a long enough period of time, the big sensation, the big emotion is regret, because they feel keenly the opportunities that they let go of, the scholarship that they didn't take, the situation that they sabotaged in one way or another. And it is it's like a heavy burden. And there can be actually intense depression and big mood swings, suicidal thoughts, and all kinds of complications, because they look back on their life and feel, you know, what did I do? Why did I let it get away? And that feeling is amazingly early to come. I've worked with 19-year-olds who already feel like they screwed it up.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if they settle in on that attitude, then they really are doomed for life, when the truth is, of course, that no, there is no one chance that is the chance you should have taken. And the chance that's in front of you, you could say 6 months from now, if you let it go by, it was the one you should have taken. So it's in every instant that you have the opportunity to change directions and to move positively toward some goals. But I've talked a lot so far about these sort of extreme forms of underachievement. What I really came to realize when I was working with people is that underachievement is a matter of degree. You talk to people and almost no one feels that they have really maxed out what their capacities were. And it's not just some kind of Calvinist ethic. It's that they really know inside that they have not applied themselves very deeply,
mm-hmm.
and that their life is emptier as a consequence. And so the garden variety forms of underachievement are, you know, postponing and procrastinating choices about things that you really want to do, you know, not going ahead and signing up for that ceramics class, deciding not to ask somebody out because you think they might refuse you.
Right.
I mean, it infects every part of our lives, this tendency to underachieve, to aim low and settle for less, and it certainly affects our relationships. And I personally believe, Stuart, and I suspect that you would agree with me on this, if you work with couples in your practice, and I think you do some.
Yeah, definitely.
There are a number of couple problems that actually have as their root the failure to really engage in something significant that the person would be excited about on their own terms, and thus feeling empty, the person demands more and seeks more from their partner,
mm-hmm.
and it's often something their partner can't give them, because the deep satisfaction they need is to scratch an internal itch that they keep ignoring.
The way I usually frame it is in the terms of, are they living their passion or are they not? And
exactly.
and it is also demoralizing for the partner who has the expectation that their mate is much more capable of doing than they are expressing.
Right.
That it's hard to maintain this love and passion and admiration for someone that you're beginning to feel, is not showing up.
That's exactly it. And I've certainly seen people. I've actually seen a number of couples who've come in where they want to in some way nurture something in the other person, and they don't want to complain and they don't want to badger, and they're caught.
Mm-hmm.
Because what do you say if you're watching somebody kind of fritter away what you know is something remarkable within them, or just a curiosity? You know, we're not made up of just what would make us a good career.
Mm-hmm.
We're made up of all these different aspects of ourselves, and sometimes what would satisfy us deeply is following some nonlinear path that doesn't really necessarily make good career sense immediately. mm-hmm. and yet makes perfect human sense at the deepest level.
Right. And those that are really, I believe, and I believe that the risk-taking and trusting one's intuition usually leads to some amazing outcomes. And the fear is, if I do that, I might fail. And what would everybody think?
Fear of failure is a huge, huge piece mm-hmm. of underachievement. What we learned when we started working with both the adults and the kids was they were afraid to fail, partly because they had this mantle of being special that had to do with having potential. And if they check out that potential and they don't live it out, in other words, if they take a risk to do something new and they're not at the top, they're not the best, then that mean everything they've ever stood for and everything they've ever been was bogus the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And in face of that, there are a certain number of people who choose to never know. It's like, if I don't try, I can't fail. And immediately, of course, they have failed themselves, because to look back on a life and wonder what would have been or what could have been is oh so agonizing for people.
So let's take this to the next level. The first step, obviously, is somebody identifies that they're unhappy, that they have a problem,
right.
That something's not working, or the family system is saying that, or the relationship system is saying that, and they end up coming to you. Once there is that consciousness and awareness that I'm not doing what I know I could be doing, and I'm not sure I know how to break this cycle, where do you go with them from there?
Well, the thing that I wanted to do for sure in Your Own Worst Enemy of Breaking the Habit of Adult Underachievement is give people extremely explicit instructions for where to go, because what's true is that these people have talent. If it were an easy answer or very straightforward, they're so smart they would have figured it out. And obviously many of them have launched attempts to change before and have fallen away, fallen flat, just felt like the tape series that they got didn't do it, or the book, or the whatever. So these are bright people, and they are suspicious of easy answers. And mm-hmm. the solution here is that there's work involved. You have to set yourself to the task. And the absolute first thing you've got to do is you've got to move from that vague sense of dis-ease and discomfort to a very clear sense of identifying what the problem is. And of course, we spent the first part of this program describing the problem so people would say, whoa, that sounds like me,
mm-hmm.
and understand perhaps some of the feelings of frustration they've been experiencing. So once you have that sense, hey, I've got my finger on it, it's not just this vague thing, and it's not just that, I'm not getting enough good sex,
mm-hmm.
It's not Dr. Ruth's answer.
Okay.
It's got to be something else. Then there's an important decision. And when we come back from the break, we'll talk about that decision.
Good.
A little bit.
And that's exactly it. When we can take a short break here and come back and go for the solution.
Very good.
Okay, this is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and my guest tonight is Ken Christian. Our topic is overcoming underachievement, and Ken is the author of Your Own Worst Enemy, Breaking the Habit of Adult Underachievement. Before the break, we started to get into the solutions. Now that we have identified the problem, where do you go from there with individuals that come to you, Ken?
It's crucial that there's a kind of really decisive decision that you are in fact going to change, that you're going to change your life, that you're not going to go on a diet, you're going to really revise the way you live. It's not a short-term fix. It's that you want to live differently and you want to live in a different way that satisfies those needs that are being unmet. And so you've got to cross the line. And I actually have an exercise that appears in the book, but it's with every group I ever work where we draw a line in the middle of the carpet or wherever the room we're in. And people line themselves up in terms of whether they've already crossed the line and made that decision unequivocally that they're going to change and they're never going to turn back. And this is the moment in their lives and they're taking off in a new direction. Or position themselves how close they are to crossing that line and then investigating, what it is that still is the holdback. Once you cross the line, you've got to take somebody with you to support you, that you have to have the equivalent of a personal coach or a personal trainer. And it doesn't mean that it's somebody who holds out a shingle and says this is their profession. This can be just an accountability partner, a friend, somebody who who's working on the same kind of change project in their own life. But you've got to have somebody to check in with.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the world who does something serious has some kind of pit crew, entourage. Evgeny Kisin, the Russian musician who's now, I believe, in his early 30s or late 20s, he's been touring since he was in his teens, his music teacher has always traveled with him. It's not a shame to have people who help you and support you. And you even need maybe a brain trust.
Mm-hmm.
But then, crucial to your making change is to understand the process of change. And I've got a chapter, it's chapter 4 in my book, that talks about and answers the most frequently misunderstood aspects of change. And the biggest one is that people expect change to make them feel good. And in the beginning, change makes you feel lousy, and that's the main reason that people don't change.
Mm-hmm.
They stay in a groove. Yeah, they fear failure. Yeah, they fear the increased demands that success would bring and so on. But they also misunderstand that in the beginning, when you're changing, you feel awkward, you feel confused, you feel out of sorts. It's the reason why people resist change initiatives in organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Change is not something we usually terribly like because it takes us out of the comfortable grooves we're in,
mm-hmm,
and forces us to think a whole lot and be noticing all kinds of things that we're not quite doing as well as we want to. And if you understand that that awkward, confused feeling is not a sign that you should quit and it's not working, but is in fact the sign that you are changing.
And that it is working.
And it is working. It is the actual, the confusion is the actual evidence that you're beginning to get out of all the stuff that's rote in your life, that's overlearned and automatic, and you're thinking now and you're feeling the tension that change creates.
It's just putting you into a place, I say on the show often, that it's just an unfamiliar place.
It is an unfamiliar place.
And that's what the discomfort is about. But like I said earlier on, you know, repetition over time, the longer you stay in that unfamiliar place and keep repeating the things that take you there, the more familiar it becomes and the more comfortable it becomes, and that's how the change occurs.
That's exactly it. I mean, if you slap your wristwatch on the opposite wrist right now, you're going to feel what it feels like to change. It feels funny. It feels awkward. I mean, I do a number of exercises when I'm working with groups to just take people out of their usual pattern. But if you want to try one tonight before you go to bed, don't wash your face and don't brush your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
This will not make you break out in acne, nor have your teeth fall out by the morning. It's just the way it feels.
But chances are you won't get much sleep that night.
Because it feels that strange.
Right.
It's like bizarre. It doesn't feel natural.
You haven't completed something.
Yeah, and what it is you don't realize that most of what makes you feel natural, that you think is, you know, the right way, is really just what you're absolutely familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to overcome all kinds of things, develop habits that they then adore and hang on to, whether they're healthy or not. But they have to overcome certain things.
So once they get to the place of realizing that discomfort is actually a good place to get to, what next?
Well, when you realize that you're changing, you've got to also really take an extremely realistic personal appraisal of what you've always done in the past to bail out. Like, what is it? What's your number? What's your escape route? Do you overeat? Do you get nervous? Do you get interested in something new when you come up against a challenge that's complicated for you? Because there's a series of skills that I call master skills that are not skills like brushing your teeth or tying your shoe, but they are skills that have to do with the way you exercise any other skill. So, for example, persistence is a master skill. Consistency of effort is a master skill. And there are ways to develop persistence and consistency,
mm-hmm,
that have to do with doing mildly unpleasant tasks and doing them on purpose. You can take out all your CDs and alphabetize them. Or you can arrange your socks by color. An activity that intrinsically is just an exercise, like push-ups are just an exercise. I mean, there is no utility, or maybe there is. There might be a time when you're going to be lying flat on your belly on a beach and army ants are going to come marching toward your body. And if you can push yourself up and hold yourself flat in a rigid position, they'll pass under you.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, push-ups are an exercise. They develop muscle. So there's a kind of muscle of persistence and consistency that people who haven't had to work hard haven't necessarily developed. And so they need to develop that. And so I talk a lot about master skills, and I weave into 15 specific tasks that I give, exercises that will tap into those master skills. But first there has to be such a kind of honest, candid, almost merciless self-appraisal about where you really stop short. And in the book I give, literally over 100 questions for you to evaluate what your style is currently, including your temperament,
mm-hmm.
your basic temperament. Because if you're easygoing and you don't have a lot of fire in your belly, it makes it easy for you to switch off instead of staying locked in. And so that may be an issue for you to deal with.
Okay.
And then there are other stages, including I give tasks and explicit instructions for how to replace negative habits. Now, despite the fact that you may feel like there are 93 things you're doing wrong that bottle you up, you know, that you stop too soon, that you hopscotch from one thing to another, that you don't plan, and you don't have a realistic idea of what's required to achieve, you procrastinate. When you add up all those nasty-sounding things, there are usually 5, 6, sometimes only 3 things that have such pivotal power, that you can get such leverage from them, that a lot of what I focus on in the book is finding those 3 to a maximum of usually 9 things that you really need to shift. And when you shift those, everything else starts to shift with
like a domino effect.
Exactly.
Give an example of a client you've worked with where you identified, say, those 3 things. What were they, and how did you help them shift those things?
I'll give you an example of a guy who came to see me. I tell this story in the book, but I'll tell it to you here. He came to see me. He was in disarray. He was creative. He was talented. He had numerous projects he was doing. He would go into a studio and start recording music, and then he would take time and want to develop a documentary film. He was doing all kinds of things, but he had never owned either an appointment book or an alarm clock, neither of them. And I said, let's start with an alarm clock. And he went out and he bought an alarm clock. He felt that an alarm clock was an unnecessary intrusion on his natural rhythms.
Okay.
That alarm clocks were from hell. They stood for everything bad. But what it meant was that he slept very erratically and randomly and started the day sort of in a groggy state. And he wasn't going. He went out and got the alarm clock. The next day he set the alarm clock. And with that one step, all kinds of things began to happen. Because when he had slept and not slept whenever he wanted, he missed all kinds of opportunities to make calls, to get things arranged, to do things in order. It literally had so much power, and it was so symbolic to own an alarm clock for the first time and to set it and to decide when he was going to get up and to commit himself to something a little more rhythmic in his life. It was very powerful.
Excellent.
Yeah. So then he began to do things like plan, which he had never done.
Mm-hmm.
And he eventually got an appointment book. But for a long time, he felt that if he had an appointment book, it meant that he was doing too many things. That his natural memory was the right measure for how much activity he should have in his life. And, you know, I understood. I mean, I can get that part of life. You know, why stress yourself like mad? And I'm not interested in anybody doing that. But he literally had no order.
But if things weren't working for him, it sounds to me like all this was more rationalization he was doing in his own mind to justify maintaining the chaos and stuff. So it must have reached a certain level of pain or affected relationship or career enough that he finally realized, all right, I need to start getting honest here. You know,
yeah, it was really all of the above. When
yeah.
he came to see me, as is often the case, it's something that sets off like a different kind of alarm inside. You know, the book that was written 30 years ago probably now called Passages that made quite a stir at the time.
Sheehy.
Yeah, Gail Sheehy's book. you know, if you really look at that, what that is passages is the alarm bell that goes off when people turn 40 and they realize they've underachieved.
Mm-hmm.
They realize they have all these things. So the midlife crisis is really an underachiever's crisis. It's the realization that you've let go of all kinds of things, curiosities, interests, and there are ways you haven't expressed yourself, and so this alarm has gone off at age 40. But for him, he called a college friend, or the college friend called him, and he started listening, and the guy was not anybody he would do anything but respect. He couldn't, you know, put him down and say, oh, he's an overachiever, he's sold out to the blah, blah, blah. No, he knew the guy was living a happy life, and he was productive, and he was doing interesting things. And it's like, bong?
Okay. Well, Ken, we need to take another quick break here, and we're going to come back and continue this discussion. This is Stuart Altshuler, and Tell the Truth Faster, so please stay tuned, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Look, is this possibly someone from your...
No, I don't know.
Well, welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight we've been talking with Ken Christian and about overcoming underachievement. And I understand we have a caller. Name is Debbie from New York. Debbie, are you there?
I had a question for Dr. Christian. I wondered if he addresses any words of advice for parents of children. I have a son, teenager with ADHD, and I'm trying to figure out how to help keep him motivated and sort of achieving.
Well,
especially, I've got, for example, he has a pickup truck that's currently in pieces, that's been in pieces for about 6 months, that, you know, is trying to get him to put it back together, that kind of thing.
Sure. There's a lot here to go into, and we could go in a number of different directions. Let me just say one thing about ADHD. I've worked with quite a few people who were ADHD, some who achieved and some who did not. And in fact, I once had I've had twins, interestingly enough, that I've worked with, where one was achieving and one was not. And it really is a matter of a decision they make about their ADHD. I like to think of somebody like Annika Sorenstam golfing in a tournament where she can't win, but she's going to still do everything she can and give it everything she's got. And so she's got some obstacles about how long she can hit the ball and her familiarity with certain kinds of conditions that are going to get her away. But I think if she plays a few more tournaments, she's going to be very serious, even though she says now she's not going to do it. But if you're, let's take a basketball player who's 5'3", Muggsy Bogues. He wants to play in the NBA. He's got to find a way to overcome the obstacles, not use them as a reason not to play. There are plenty of people who are 5'3" who didn't play professional basketball. There's one who did, and he did it by deciding how to do it. The motivation, however, you're at a really delicate crossroads when you start to say, how can I motivate him? Because as soon as you try to start supplying the motivation from the outside, you create yourself as kind of like an auxiliary motor for a system, and it's a very delicate thing from the outside to motivate somebody. What I would encourage you to do is to talk to him about his truck and ask him where he is. And is he still interested in putting the truck together? And if so, is he interested in a plan for how he's going to do that? And would he like some help with somebody to help keep him accountable to that plan? And he can develop the plan in conjunction with you or his father or a friend, but with plenty of encouragement from the outside, he can put that truck together. If the truck is not something he's any longer interested in, then I think he has to deal with that in a responsible way.
Okay. And sometimes there's an embarrassment, Debbie, of admitting that you really don't want to follow through, or you've lost interest in something. And I also have ADDs, and I know what that's like sometimes to get started on something and then see it staring you in the face every day, and it sometimes helps deaden the passion for that very thing because there's so much shame and guilt around the whole issue.
And the longer anything is undone, it just grows in terms of its resistance or your resistance to doing it. I mean, it could be a small pile of mail. If you set it aside one day, there must have been a good reason to set aside that day. So the next day you look at it and you go, if I didn't have time yesterday, I sure don't have time today. And for a car that sits unfinished, I mean, I once had a friend that I knew 30 years ago who had a Corvette that he was going to build in his garage, and it was exactly where it was when I left town 2 years later from where it was when I first knew him, and it's because he had let it sit there for so long. Why is today going to be the day I'm going to start?
Right. Debbie, how old's your son?
He'll be 17 in July.
And if you know he has ADHD, is he in treatment? Is he seeing a therapist? Is he working with an ADD coach or anything like that?
And it's by Regan Books, HarperCollins, and it's available in most bookstores, or they can order it for you, or it's on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com.
Debbie, thanks for calling in. The way we started out the show, I started by talking about ADD, and a lot of what, Ken, you've been talking about is the underachievers are not necessarily, for the most part, people with ADD or learning disorders or other things.
No, in fact, if you've got a problem that actually prevents you from achieving, literally prevents you from achieving, you can't talk about it as underachievement. If you need two arms to do something and one of your arms is gone,
mm-hmm.
That's not underachievement.
Right.
But yes, what underachievers do is fail to fulfill their potential, but everybody has obstacles. Everybody has strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not to allow ADHD to be the thing that stops you.
Right.
It's the thing you have to work with and work around.
And there are many people with a diagnosis like ADD that once they hear it, they go, oh great, I have an excuse now.
I have an excuse, I'm going to fold my tent. I'm going to be a lifer with ADHD.
Right.
There are even kids who tell their parents, oh, my underachievement is starting to kick up, you know. Anything can become an excuse, and any diagnosis provides that kind of basis.
As opposed to hearing, I have ADD, now I understand why these things are going on, now I need to learn what I can learn to move beyond the ADD as one of the reasons for me feeling stuck.
Exactly. And there's a lot more to do than simply take medication.
Totally.
And in the East, as you know very well, with your holistic emphasis, attention is considered the weakest mental function, and it's worked on all the time. That's what meditation is for. It's a technology for developing attention, and we don't do that here as much. We tend to want a technology that's going to do it for us, or something we can pop in our mouths. And that's not to disparage the legitimate use of any kind of medication that's going to help somebody, but it's that we really, truly tend to medicate first and do these things that require work second, which I do believe is a form of underachievement on our part as a culture.
Well, I've said that many times on the show because I am a believer in the meds when it comes to this, but the meds themselves are not the problem solver. It just allows you to access the space in your brain that you can then learn the changes that need to be done. That's why I talked about, you know, there are people who are trained and certified as ADD coaches for people,
right,
which supply a lot of the things you've been talking about, that person that you're accountable to,
right,
that person helps you, that works from step to step.
Now, I do coaching, and I work with organizations, and I do consulting, and often the issues at an organizational level are highly similar to the ones that I've been describing to you so far. They play themselves out in a different way. But that becomes a very, very interesting thing, and people talk about underperforming team, athletic teams, underperforming organizations, underachieving this, underachieving that. Often it's a fear of failure. Often it's that structured set of habits. It's that culture that gets created that supports a kind of coasting approach instead of innovation and a seeking for change that's truly beneficial.
I would think also with an organization that it also is a result of an individual or a couple of individuals within it that held that belief system of underachievement too.
Yeah, there's something really powerful about how something gets started. In our country, the Puritans were among the first settlers who made permanent quarters here, and it's, you know, we still bear a lot of that heritage with
mm-hmm.
us for good and for bad.
Right.
So cultures develop organizations, and it's usually remarkable people who are opinion leaders within an organization who are going to help change that organization, or who got it launched in a certain way, and then everybody tends to follow and lockstep.
Right. So, Ken, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight.
Been a pleasure.
And it's certainly been a pleasure having you on the show. And again, for those of you that are interested, the name of his book is Your Own Worst Enemy, Breaking the Habit of Adult Underachievement. If you want to reach Ken, get him a message, you could either do it through the website for the show, tellthetruthfaster.com, or you can go to the website www.maxpotential.com, M-A-X-P-O-T-E-N-T-I-A-L.com, and reach him there. I want to thank Debbie for listening and calling in tonight, and I want to thank all of you out there who've been listening, and tune in next week. This is Stuart Altshuler, and Tell the Truth Faster.
Thank you, pleasure. Stuart.
Thanks, Ken.
And my pleasure.
Good night.
That I heard of once.